Okay, tonight is the third part and final installment in our discussion of Olam Haba and Mashiach and the like. I would like to start with a brief idea from the Parsha that very much affects what we've been doing. This week's Parsha is Parsha's Emor. And in Parsha's Emor, we have the Torah's description of the Lechem HaPanim at the end of the Parsha, and that's followed by the discussion of the Mekalel. This is at the end of the Parsha. We have the Parsha in Perkav Dalet, starting from Pasuk Aleph, we have Lechem HaPanim. And then Pasuk Yud, Vayetze ben Ish Yisraelis, Vehu ben Ish Mitzri, Besof ben Yisrael, right? And Vaikov ben Haisha Yisraelis, is Hashem Vayikalel. So what is the Snichos HaParshios? Chazal tell us that what caused him to be Mekalel, Ligleg Alechem HaPanim. There was something about the Lechem HaPanim which caused him great distress. And the question is, what exactly is it? Simple interpretation is it has to do with the fact that the bread was stale and the like, but there's a more profound idea, and this is an idea that I heard once from Rav Stav, my Rebbe. Just to be mosif on the questions, so question number one is, what was it in the Lechem HaPanim that caused him to go off the derech? Number two, the Rambam, if you look in his Chelek Shlishi of Mar Nevuchim, where he goes through all the mitzvos, I think he says that there's one mitzvah that he doesn't understand. Now, if you're going to pick one mitzvah not to understand, there are a lot of pretty difficult chukim. And the Rambam says, what's the mitzvah I don't understand? Lachem hapanim. So the question is, of course, what is so difficult to understand about Lechem HaPanim? I understand certain, you know, questions you might have on it, but why is it that Lechem HaPanim is so, so difficult to understand? And the Rambam explains a little bit. The Rambam says that Lechem HaPanim goes against all of the normal procedures. How so? Normally when it comes to things in the Beis HaMikdash, the more elevated status that they are, or the closer Bifnim, so then the lower, then the more that they're not shayach to achilas b'nei adam, to eating. So for example, regular chatas has basar, which is eaten, but any chatas panimi, any chatas that's brought bifnim, is not eaten. The shlamim, for example, that is the most bachutz, it doesn't need shchita b'tzafon, for example, is mostly eaten. Right, and it has a lower level of kedusha. So generally, when it comes to kachim, the more something is bifnim, the more kadosh it is. And the more kadosh it is, then the less possibility there exists for human consumption. And lechem hapanim is the great exception to this. Why is lechem hapanim the great exception? Because lechem hapanim is bifnim. It's on the shulchan, which was bifnim. And yet it's entirely eaten. The only chilek l'mizbeach is the k'toras, the bazichin, but among the bread, it's entirely eaten. And therefore, it goes against everything we would expect. It's the great mystery of kachim. It's totally bifnim, and yet it's the high, despite its being the highest, highest possible kedusha, it's consumed by human beings. And that presumably was what the Mekalel couldn't understand. How could it be that it's so kadosh, and yet it's consumed by humans? There's a fascinating line in the Zemer, Ki Eshmer HaShabbos, which was written by the Ibn Ezra. It says, Rashom Bidas HaKel Chok El Saganav. So there's this great chok. Bo laroch lechem panim befanav, to be orech the lechem apanim, to organize, to set the lechem apanim. Al kain lihis anos bo al pi nevonav asur, levad miyom kippur avoni. Therefore, because of the lechem apanim, it's asur to fast on Shabbos, with the exception of Yom Kippur. So what does one thing have to do with the other? Ibn Ezra says, because there's a mitzvah, this chok, of lechem apanim, therefore fasting on Shabbos is asur. What's the idea here? The idea here is exactly that. The idea here is that the great mystery, the chok of lechem apanim, is that even though it's bifnim, it's mutar b'achila, and there's a mitzvah sachila. And this is referring to the idea, and this is an idea that we've been discussing really the whole way through. The notion of olam haba, assuming again like the position of the Ramban and others, who assume that olam haba means some form of physical existence, even in a totally spiritual world. Remember, the Rambam argued with the traditional view. The traditional view was that after Tchiyas HaMeisim, there would be olam haba. And in olam haba, there would be physical existence, a physical body, but yet there would be no achila, no shdia. And the Rambam said that's impossible, because if there is no achila and shdia and the like, if it's a spiritual existence, an existence of spiritual bliss, so what in the world is there a need for a body? And the Ramban and others who disagree say no. That even in this spiritual existence, there's room for tikkun of the guf. And it's possible to have kedusha of the highest levels even within the physical existence. And this might relate to a much broader machlokas. If you look at the famous Igeres HaRamban, which they point, the Igeres HaKodesh, which is attributed to the Ramban, even if we assume it wasn't written to the by the Ramban itself. And the Igeres HaKodesh talks about how the Rambam's position with respect to physical things, especially Tashrish Amita, was wrong, because the Rambam made the mistake, and this was perhaps a result of his influence by Greek philosophy, that physical corporeality, etc., contradicts spirituality. And therefore, while Tashra Shamita is necessary in a mitzvah at times, but it's not, doesn't have the same type of kedusha. And in the Igeres HaKodesh, the Ramban, or whoever the author is, says no, he's making a mistake. And it's the same mistake that he makes with his rejection of Olam Haba having a physical body. And it's the same reason why he can't understand the idea of the Lachem Apanim, that there was something that was so kadosh. And that's what the Ibn Ezra here is saying. He's saying that the idea of Lachem Apanim is the idea of Shabbos, and it's why Tanis is Asar on Shabbos, and it's why Shabbos is considered Me'ein Olam Haba. It's all about the merging of the spiritual and the physical. And while this is something that we have a very hard time understanding, because the Pashup Shat, as it were, when we think of ourselves and we think of the world, is like the Rambam. And it's not that the Rambam, Chas V'Shalom, was totally wrong. His rule is generally true. The more something is shayach bifnim, is shayach to the Olam Moed, the more, the higher level of Kedusha, the more it's detached from physical world. But there's something that goes further, and this is a sod, and it's something that we can't understand. We can't understand the nature of Olam Haba for this reason, but the sod of Shabbos and the sod of Lechem Apanim and the sod of Olam Haba is that there is a makom for this high elevated spiritual state even within the confines of a physical body and a physical world. So, the idea of the very difficult parsha, the parsha of the Mekalel, might have a lot to do with our topic. The first thing that I'd like to discuss with you today is something that I told you I would discuss last time, which is, if Olam Haba is such a fundamental idea, why is it not mentioned in the Torah? Now, this is a question that's equally true whether you hold of the Rambam or the Ramban. Like we said last time, everybody agrees that the Iker, the primary place of Schar, is spiritual Schar of Olam Haba. And that's true whether you think there's no physical body or you think there is a spiritual body. That's the Iker Makom of Schar, Olam Haba. And if that's true, then we have to ask, why is it not mentioned in the Torah? And moreover, it's not just the question of why is it not mentioned in the Torah, but even more problematic is the idea that the Torah, when it does talk about rewards and punishments, seems to focus on physical rewards and physical punishments. We could think of Parshas Kisavo and Parshas Bechukosai, but the truth is the Torah has it many other places. It always talks about physical rewards, that if you follow the Torah, there'll be plentiful crops and rain and dew, and we'll triumph over our enemies, and if we don't follow the Torah, there'll be famine and drought and the like. So it's a double question. A, why do we focus on the physical rewards? And B, why doesn't it focus on the spiritual rewards if they are Iker? Now, if we look at Chazal and the Mefarshim, there are many, many Ramazim to Olam Haba and Tchias HaMesim in the Torah. In fact, we cited the Mishnah in Sanhedrin earlier, which says, Kol Omer She'en Tchias HaMesim Min HaTorah Ein Lo Chelak LiOlam Haba. It's not just that if you don't say, if you deny Tchias HaMesim, that you have no Chelak in Olam Haba, but if you say, Ein Tchias HaMesim Min HaTorah, you have no Chelak. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin offers many, many Ramazim in the Torah for this idea. Az Yashir Moshe, for example, which implies that in the future Moshe Rabbeinu will once again be able to sing, and that implies that there will be Tchias HaMesim. And if you look at the Gemaras, you'll see many of them. As we pointed out, very frequently, the Ramazim to Tchias HaMesim are based on the words Eretz, or Yerusha, or Nachla, both in Tarsha B'chsav and in Tarsha B'alpeh. The most famous example, perhaps, is the Mishnah that we say at the end of Pirkei Avos, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek B'Olam Haba, Shenemar, V'Amech Kulam Tzadikim, Li'Olam Yershu Aretz. Yershu Aretz is a proof that Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek B'Olam Haba, because it is Amech Kulam Tzadikim, Li'Olam Yershu Aretz. But nevertheless, it's not explicit. It's not explicit. So the question is, why isn't it explicit? Now, while it's true that in the Torah, meaning to say the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, it's not explicit, in Nach, it is more explicit. We have the Pesukim in Yechezkel, the famous prophecy of the dry bones. In Yeshayahu, Perek Chavav, Pasuk Yotes, the Pasuk says, Yichyu Meisecha, Nivlasei Yikumun, Hakitzu Virananu, Shochnei Afar, Kital Oras Talecha. The most explicit example the Rambam points out in Nach of Tchias HaMesim is the Psukim towards the end of Daniel. V'rabim yishinei admas afar yakitu, Eilu l'chai olam, v'eile l'cherpos l'diron olam. There will be many who will arise through Tchias HaMesim. Some will live in eternal spiritual bliss, and some in eternal damnation. So there are a handful of explicit or nearly explicit verses scattered about Nach. We have Tzror HaChaim and the like. But still, even in Nach, the references are relatively few and far between. The Rashban Tshuvos actually addresses this issue. The Rashba in Shuvos Chelak Aleph Simen Tes says, V'da, ki kol chacham michachmei Torah seinu, yifarish ha-mekraos kitzurasan, v'af al pi sha-chachma filosofis so-sarasosam. The philosophy contradicts the notion of Olam Haba, certainly of a physical existence in Olam Haba, the idea of Tchias HaMesim, but we explain the Pesukim as we have our Kabbalah. Ki'inyan Tchias HaMesim, she'en aksuvim muchrachim bo hechreach nechtach. There are no psukim that are clearly and unambiguously referring to Tchias HaMesim and Olam Haba. V'yesh lefarish kol ha-mikros b'derech mashal. Even those psukim that do seem to be talking about Tchias HaMesim, they could be explained as some form of metaphor. So how do we know? The answer is we know based on Kabbalah. We know based on our Mesorah, based on our tradition. That's how we know. And that's why we know it's true, and that's why we believe in it. And again, then the question remains, why is it only that we know through Kabbalah? Why aren't there any explicit sources? So this is such a strong question that many, many Rishonim and Achronim deal with it. And very briefly tonight, I'd like to point out 7 answers. There are even more that we're not going to do. The first place where I saw this explicitly addressed is in Sefer Emunos Videos by Rav Sadia Gaon Ma'amar Tes. And he begins with a very important point. He says, V'omer mima she'machayev oso ha-seichel od. Among the things that seichel is machayev, meaning to say that we could figure out misvara on our own. Even though we just saw the Rashba says that we know how to interpret the psukim this way based on a mesorah. But the notion of olam haba is something that seichel is mechayev. That's obvious. Why? Lo yitachein liyo shir hatova asher kivein ba lenefesh hazos huma shehu motzah ba'olam hazeh mitovosav v'hanaosav. It can't be that this is it. The way the Ramchal puts it in Mesilas Yesharim is that why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu have created such a soul, such an neshama, as we have, if all there was this world? And you could say it in many respects. You could say it's obvious, because if it wasn't for the fact that there was some type of spiritual schar after this world, then we would have no way of explaining tzaddik v'ralo v'rasha v'tovlo. Or we could say it more that it's obvious just because, again, of the greatness of our neshama. So first of all, Rav Sadia Gaon starts off by telling us, how do we know it's true? The seichel is mechayev. Rav Sadia Gaon generally, and many follow him in this respect, like, for example, in the Sefer Chovos Avavos, says that we know things frequently in 3 ways. And he often will prove something from 3 sources. Number 1 is Torah, number 2 is Mesorah, is Chazal, and number 3 is Seichel, is Svara. So here we know this idea not just from Chazal, and not just from the Psukim, but it's Svara, and it's a Svara Pshuta, that there must be something else beyond this world. So why then doesn't the Torah say it? So the Rasag gives 2 reasons. First of all, he says that the Torah does not bother telling us, or at least elaborating on this point, because v'lachein lo hizkira hagmul ha'acher b'avur shesamcha al ha'seichel shiyore alav. The Torah relied on our ability to figure it out on our own, and therefore there was no need to elaborate. This is reminiscent of the line that the Gemara says in a number of places, Lamali kras svarahu. If something is so obvious, then there's no need for it to be stated explicitly. Lamali kra, I don't need the pasuk to tell me this. This is an idea that many of the Gaonim say. If you look at the Hakdama Rabbeinu Nisim Gaon to the Gemara at the beginning of which is printed in the beginning of Brachos in the Vilna Shas, he elaborates on this point. And the Ramban in several places, including Shmos Perek Vav Pasuk Beis and Vayikra Perek Vav Pasuk Yud Aleph, elaborate on this point. And the Ramban writes that Aval Schar Kol HaTorah V'Ansha V'Olam Hazeh HaKol Nisim V'Heim Nistarim. The purpose, the schar that we experience in Olam Hazeh, meaning to say that if you do the mitzvos, you'll be prosperous, and that if you do the averos, you'll be punished, at least as, with respect to the society, those are nisim. Yechashev bahem leroim, shehu minhago shel olam. V'heim ba'adam onesh v'schar be'emes. U'mipnei zeh, tarich bi'udim sheb'olam hazeh. That's why these are nisim nistarim, meaning to say that they could be dismissed Somebody could just say that they're teva. And that's the reason why the Torah elaborates on these so much. V'lo teva'er yi'udei ha'nefesh b'olam ha'neshamos. But it does not elaborate or explain the rewards in the olam ha'neshamos. Ki ela mofsim shekeneged hatolda. What is surprising? What's the bigger chiddush? The Ramban says that the chiddush is not that there's olam haba. That's pashat. V'kiyum ha'nefesh v'dveika be'elokim hu davar ra'ui b'toldasa shehi tashuv el ha'elokim asher nisana. It's obvious that there's going to be nitzchias ha'neshama. It's obvious that the neshama, after it separates from the guf, is going to go back to our Kadosh Baruch Hu and be sustained. That's obvious. What's the chiddush? What's surprising? What's surprising is that there's going to be physical rewards and physical punishments for the doing of spiritual mitzvot and the violation of the spiritual Torah. And therefore, the Torah focuses on what's the chiddush and not what's obvious. So that's picking up on the idea from Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon gives an additional reason, which we're going to get back to later. I'll just mention it now. Vashenis ki anevua mi minhaga laharchiv bedvarm shehatzorech mevi aleihem bekarov. Nevua focuses on more immediate concerns. V'tikatzer bedvarm harachokim. And it does not elaborate upon things that are not immediate. And that's why when the Jews left Mitzrayim, what was of more immediate concern was Eretz Kanaan and how to get there and the like. And this is far off and therefore less focused on. Okay, but we'll get back to that point. So approach number one, Rav Sadia Gaon and Ramban, is that it's obvious and it doesn't need to be focused on. And if anything, the idea of physical and rewards and punishments, that's the chiddush, so that's the focus. Okay. Approach number two is the Rambam. The Rambam we already saw in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Yud. And the Rambam writes that you should not do Torah and mitzvos in order to get Olam Haba. Because that's like serving God, al menas lekabel pras. So if the Torah mentioned Olam Haba, then people would serve God in order to get Olam Haba. And that's not the ideal form of service. Then the obvious question is, if that's true, so then why does the Torah mention physical and spiritual rewards? Doing that is certainly far less ideal. It's much worse than doing it for Olam Haba. So there we saw the Ramban says, no, the physical and spiritual rewards mentioned in the Torah are not actually rewards and punishments. What they are, as we discussed, are that God tells us, if you do mitzvos, I'll put you in a position that you'll be able to do more mitzvos in order to get Olam Haba. If you recall, we saw that's what the Rambam held as the primary purpose of Mashiach and the like. Elsewhere, the Rambam gives slightly different answers to this question. In Mor Nevuchim, third book, Perek Lamed, the Rambam minimizes the significance of the physical rewards mentioned in the Torah, and he says the reason why the Torah spends so much time discussing them is another theme that we've seen a lot in the Rambam from Mor Nevuchim, is that these ideas were necessary to wean the Jewish people from their pagan beliefs. In other words, the pagans believed that following the pagan rite would lead to material blessings, and to reassure the Jews that they would benefit from abandoning their pagan beliefs and following the Torah says, yes, if you follow the Torah, you will also get physical rewards, and if you violate the Torah, you'll be physically punished. And generally speaking, that's why in the earlier, the Torah does not focus on it, but when the people were weaned from, the Rambam says, when they were, and he actually says this second point in his Igeres Tchias HaMesim, when they were weaned from their attachment to idolatry, then there was more of a focus on Olam Haba. And that's why he says the most explicit reference to Olam Haba is in the book of Daniel, because the book of Daniel is much, much later. It was written during when the Jews were in Bavel. And at that point, for the most part, the desire for Olam Haba no longer, sorry, for Avodah Zarah no longer existed, and therefore at that point it became appropriate to more explicitly discuss things like Olam Haba and Tchias HaMeisim. So that's the second approach. The second approach is that if you focus on Olam Haba, if the Torah talked a lot about Olam Haba, then people would focus on it too much. The Maharal says this in Tiferes Yisrael, Perek Nilches, Ki eich afshar shiyu nizkar b'torah shum schar ki ilu amar shiyavod ha'adam b'ra'o b'shvil ha'schar. If the Torah had focused on schar, the implication would be you should serve God in order to get the schar. And that's not why we serve God. Why do we serve God? Like the Rambam says, we're oses ha'emes mepnei shehu emes. We do what's right because it's right. We do what's true because it's true. And not in order to get Olam Haba. The third approach is an idea that the Ibn Ezra and others say, which is that the Torah refrains from discussing abstract, unintelligible matters. Olam Haba, as we already saw, is something which can't really be understood. As the Gemara says, the Nevi'im described Yemos HaMashiach, but with respect to Olam Haba, Ayin lo rasa bilti elokim zulasacha. We, in our current existence, can't understand Olam Haba. We can't understand what it is. And therefore, the Torah doesn't discuss it, because it's something that is beyond our ability to understand. The Ibn Ezra says this on the Pasuk in Dvarim Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Lamed Tes, which for him is one of the Ramazim of Olam Haba. The Pasuk says, Ruata, ki ani anihu, ve'ein elokim imadi, ani amis ve'achaya, machatzdi v'anirpa, ve'ein miyadi matzil. So the Pasuk says, I will kill and bring alive, and implying that first I will kill you and then you'll bring alive, just like machatzdi v'anirpa. So this is a remez to Olam Haba. But then he says, well, if this is a remez, why isn't it more explicit? Ulfidati shatara nitna lakol. The Torah was given to everybody, and for everybody to understand, at least on a basic level. And complex philosophical matters, therefore, are not explicitly discussed.
Is it room?
I'm sorry?
Who writes this?
That was the Ibn Ezra I was reading. Okay. The Maharal actually picks up on that idea also and says that the, I think this is in Ber HaGola, if I recall. He says that that's why it's discussed more in Tarsha Baal Peh, not in Tarsha Bechsav, because Tarsha Bechsav is, maybe I'll, I'm going to get to that. Well, we'll get to that shortly. Okay. The fourth approach is a fascinating idea. This is in the Drasha Saran, among other places, in the Drasha Rishon. And that's the idea that the Torah only pledges controvertible promises. Anything that can't be proven is worthless to promise. If I were to start a new religion, so I'd say that anybody who follows me will get lots of reward in the afterlife. Why? Because that way I can never be disproven. As long as you're alive, you won't see a contradiction to me. So the Torah promises that which can be seen and that which can be proven. Sheyeshalach for bo mitzad har oso v'agloso lachosh. V'lazeh lo hutzruchu atar lehamshich yehudeha al inyani olam haba. But it does give rewards in this world which are controvertible. And the Maharal takes this approach also in Tiferes Yisrael Perek Nun Ches, that belief in the Torah has an empirical base. We see this in many ways. The national testimony of the Exodus and Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, that it's not just something that was witnessed by a handful of people, but everybody. And likewise, stressing the fundamentality of Olam Haba would have compromised this. Number five, this is something from the Ikrim. I don't really understand this. In Mamar Revi, Perek Lamed Tes Rumem, and he writes that the Torah focuses on collective rewards and punishments. Essentially, the Torah focuses on rewards and punishments that are relevant to the Jewish collective, that relate to Am Yisrael as a whole. Now, collective punishment could only take place in this world, because regarding collective punishment, even if the minority is unworthy, they're rewarded along with the rest. And likewise, even if the majority are unworthy, then the minority that are worthy are punished along with the rest. But individual punishment is not focused on in the Torah. And obviously, Olam Haba and the punishment after one dies is individual. Everybody gets exactly what they deserve. There's no concept of Kevan Shenitan Rishus Lamashchis Eino Mavchin Bein Sadik Lerasha. And therefore, the Torah doesn't focus on it. The Torah is sort of speaking to Klal Yisrael as a whole and not to individuals. Now, I don't really understand why this idea. You know, isn't the Torah also referring to individuals, and why couldn't it also tell you about individuals?
Maybe it's along the same lines that no one person can do all Torah mitzvahs. They just give them to the collectivity.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps along the same lines.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. The sixth approach is very interesting. The Maharal writes, this relates to something we said earlier, which is that prophecy doesn't relate to that which is not part of this worldly reality. And this is the Maharal in Perek Nun Zion. Prophecy appears in a vision, and it relates to that which is in this world. The intellect, on the other hand, relates to even that which is abstract. The Maharal explains that's the idea of Chacham Adif Minavi, that a Chacham who uses Chachma can understand things that even a Navi can't, because a Navi who understands through vision, through a Chazon, can only relate to this worldly things as opposed to a Chacham. And finally, the seventh approach, which we're going to say tonight, is that the Torah is a guide to perfecting this world, and focusing on the next world would be a distraction. And that's also from the Maharal Perek Nun Ches. If there's a degree of completeness that could be achieved in this world, then mentioning Olam Haba would imply a lack of completeness. And, you know, you have to keep the eye on the ball. It's a very interesting idea as well. As I said, there are other answers. If you look at the Abarbanel and Vayikra on Perek Chaf Bav Pasuk Gimel, he has a number of resolutions. The Kli Yakar also in Perek Chaf Bav Pasuk Yud Beis has a number of additional answers. Okay, one last thing, and I'm just going to mention this briefly, and then we'll close. So we talked about how, according to Ramban, there's Gan Eden and there's Olam Haba. Gan Eden relates to the Olam HaNeshamos, whereas Olam Haba is after Tchias HaMesim. The question is, which you might wonder, is what is Gan Eden? Is Gan Eden the physical place on this world as described in Parshas Bereishis? And how do you understand this? So the Ramban deals with this in his Shahar Gmul. This is something I don't really understand, but I'll mention a couple of interesting points. First of all, when the Ramban discusses this, he points out he begins by pointing out a very important yesod. Ma'aseh ha'olam ha'elyon ve'ha'emtza'i ve'ha'shafel. Ve'rimzeh ha'vayos kol ha'merkav ha'sham ve'kol nivraim atzmam b'yitzirasan b'dmus nivra'u. What that means is that the physical world is very much a impression or a map or a mashal to the spiritual world and the spiritual truth. And it's by examining the physical world and our physical bodies that we could understand God and that which is ultimately true. The Zohar proves this from the pasuk in the book of Iyov, Mibsari Achzeloka, that Mibsari, meaning from my body, Achzeloka, I could understand God. A lot of people come to misunderstandings of Chachmas HaSod because they see Chachmas HaSod describing God in physical features, and they say, ah, you see, it believed that God in some way was corporeal or the like. Chas v'shalom. But the idea, it's almost like the opposite understanding that the Rambam gives to Tzelem Elokim. You'll see this alluded to if you look in the first parak of Nefesh HaChaim. Tzelem Elokim, and Mibsariach Zelokan, what the Ramban says here, is that by looking at the analogies of this world, we could understand the deeper truths. And along those lines, he explains what Gan Eden is. Gan Eden was, of course, a physical place on this world, which was set up to understand the supernal truths. It says in the pasuk, "V'hanar yotze me'eden lahashkos es hagan," and what that means is that there was Eden, there was the Gan. Adam HaRishon was in the Gan. Between the Gan and Eden, there was a Nahar. The Nahar was Yotze Me'eden Lahashkos Es HaGan. This refers to the Olam HaSiya, which was the Gan, the Olam HaMachshava, which was Eden, and the Nahar, which is the Olam HaDibor, which connects them. Now these things are, of course, well beyond certainly my ability to understand and explain. These are based on Ramban and other Svarim. And that's the Yesod. And the Ramban here says a fascinating thing, which he alludes to it, which I thought was very interesting, which is, if you look at the Torah, so you see that there are two very, very special places on the world, physical places. And each of them have analogs that are spiritual. We have Gan Eden, and for that there's Gan Eden Tachton, which has an analog, what we could call Gan Eden Elyon. And then we have the Makom HaMikdash. We have Eretz Yisrael, and most Kadosh in Eretz Yisrael's Yerushalayim, and most Kadosh there is the Makom HaMikdash. And there too we have the Mikdash Shalmata Keneged, Mechuvan Keneged, the Mikdash Shalmala. So there's two places that are very, very special on the physical world, and each of them have spiritual analogs. What's the difference? So I think the Ramban alludes to a very interesting thing here. As I said, he doesn't say it explicitly, but this is what I think he says, which is that I'll read you a sentence where he seems to allude to this. Gan Eden was a place where umasigin kol ma sheyuchal hanivra ladas ulahavin. And he actually interestingly compares it to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. Gan Eden was the place where a person was capable of understanding all that they're capable of understanding. In other words, the closest approximation of the truth, the greatest understanding of the divine that's possible, that was possible in Gan Eden. And that's why a person goes there after they die. The neshama goes to Gan Eden because that's where they're going to be able to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the greatest possible way. And in that way, the neshama will be able to prepare for Olam Haba. What about the Mikdash? The Mikdash was a place that was miyuchad le-nevuah, he says. That was a place that was miyuchad for closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I thought that perhaps with this we could understand why the flourishing of Torah she'bal peh occurred in Bavel, as Reb Tzadok and others explained. Because Bavel, which of course, at Shinar, which was approximately or close to the place of Gan Eden, was the place where we, in many ways, got closest through our Seichel to understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whereas Eretz Yisrael was the place where we got closest through prophecy. And this is along the lines of ideas that you see in the Kuzari and the Rav Kook develops and the like. There are different models of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's the Chacham and there's the Navi. one perhaps is more intellectual, one is perhaps more emotional or spiritual or the like. And therefore, Bavel, which was somehow tied to Gan Eden, is the place where we could achieve the highest level of knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Eretz Yisrael, which is tied to Nevuah, and the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is the place where we could have the greatest connection, emotional and spiritual connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, the two are related, and that's why they merge in Olam Haba. So that brings us to an end of this topic. Yasher Koach.